Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our time together every week. It is an incredibly saddened Captain Joe, and we're going to talk a bit about the why of that. If I'd known how to set it up instead of Semper Paratus this afternoon at one bell of the afternoon watch on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band, broadcasting live all over the world, streaming live on voiceofvashon.org. If I'd known how to do it, or if I'd thought about it when I still had Captain O'Brien, my technical colleague, to do it, instead of Semper Paratus, I would have played the Sailor's Hymn, Eternal Father, Strong to Save. For this is a very sad day for me, not only, and I'll get to that in just a minute, but it is also the birthday of our beloved nation, the 4th of July. And for Coast Guard people who are members of the Coast Guard Channel, the fourth of every month is also the month, the day of each month that we set aside to make sure that our shipmates who we are taking care of are being taken care of. This is the buddy day that we created so that on the fourth of every month, if we don't do it any other day, we remember to check up, make sure that our shipmates are still with us. And if they're not with us, that they are being properly placed on the binnacle list. So, last week, on Thursday, I went to the change of command ceremony for the Coast Guard cutter Healy. I have talked about Healy many times on this program. And Healy is a very special ship to me because when I was the ICE boss, when I was in charge of all Coast Guard activities and all Coast Guard ships and units that worked in the ICE anywhere in the world, for one of the great gentlemen of our service, the commandant then was Admiral Jim Gracie. And in that job, my colleagues and I created the vision that became Healy. We set the parameters for her design. The expression I use is that we are, and I in particular, am Healy's sea daddy. For her change of command, the captain who was being relieved was particularly desirous that as many of the icebreaker captains still available were invited, and we were all invited. We all had special parking places. We were piped aboard and we were piped ashore. All of these things that are so beloved of all of us who have made within the profession of arms and the profession of going to sea the highly specialized skills of being icebreaker captains. The commandant, Admiral Linda Fagan, was the presiding officer. At the appropriate time, when it is necessary for the captain being relieved to relinquish his command to his successor, there is a very poignant part in the ceremony. I've commanded six different Coast Guard cutters and one large Coast Guard shore command. And at each one of those, that means that I have had 14 change of command ceremonies. At seven of those, I was relieving, and at seven of those, I was being relieved. At the appropriate time in the ceremony, the two officers, the one being relieved and the one about to assume the privilege of command, they face each other. They have just read their orders, and they then face each other. The officer who is relieving salutes, and he or she, in this case it was a she, say, "Sir, I relieve you." At that very moment, the total, complete responsibility for that command shifts from the officer being relieved to the one who just said those words, "Sir, I relieve you." And that accountability and that responsibility goes all the way back to all of the things that happened in that ship, not just in the last 10 minutes, not in just the last 2 years, but if there are any loose ends that are still hanging out there called Irish penance, the new captain assumes responsibilities for those. And we have always known that. Every time, even when I was 23 and relieving for the first time in my first command at sea, even then, I knew that if there was anything that had been done by my predecessors two commands before and it's still not been squared away, it was mine to deal with. So the new commanding officer, a lady, and I mention that for a specific reason because we're going to talk about that as part of what is so troubling to me today. She saluted. She said, "Sir, I relieve you." The officer being relieved then returns that salute and says, "I stand relieved." That means, over to you, new captain. Whatever mess, if I've left a mess behind, now it's your mess. If I have left you a crew that needs work, now it's your crew. If I have left you a command that is fully functional and has just earned a unit commendation, now she's your command to love and to take care of. And this is your crew to love and to take care of. There's no negotiating here. There's no equivocation. And it's been like this since at least Roman times. So that happened on Thursday. The commandant then made some remarks. And one of the things that she said was, "It's a good time to be in the Coast Guard." She made these remarks from a script that she had on the lectern. It's a good time to be in the Coast Guard. For me, of course, from the day that I took the oath for the first time when I was 17, it has always been a good day to be in the Coast Guard. The privileges of command came to me over and over again. The privilege of serving one captain in my one XO tour in Vietnam and of taking care of that particular crew and then assuming command of that crew when we returned. Every day from the day that I was 17 and took the oath for the first time has been a good day in the Coast Guard for your Captain Joe. The next day, I was beavering away at one of my other do-goods, and I had a signal from a friend who has never worn the shield, never taken the same oath, but who loves the Coast Guard as much as I do. And that signal included a film clip, or a link to a film clip on cable news network And it talked about the sexual assaults at the Coast Guard Academy over a number of years. Now, you and I have talked about that before on this program. The sexual assaults at all of the service academies, it's a phenomenon that I have no understanding of. I don't understand how classmates can assault classmates. I don't understand, if it ever happened at sea, how shipmates could assault shipmates. We've talked about that. We've not had to talk about before, but now we have to talk about it today. That not only has this been brought out in a most public arena, but also that there was an effort, and for a long time, a successful effort, to conceal an investigation that was run by the Coast Guard Investigative Service, the criminal investigation part of my service. Now, I make a parenthetical insertion here, and I'm going to make two parenthetical insertions. The first one is that the warning of heads up, incoming rounds, because what I have to say is addressed in particular to Captain Joe's people who are Coast Guardsmen. But all of you who listen to me loyally and faithfully every week will get something out of this. Because the principle that I'm going to lay out, have laid out before, I'm going to lay out again in the shadow of my own grief, has some application to every single one of you who listen to me today. You listen to me today because you trust me. You trust that I will tell you the truth as I see it. And you trust that when there are things that I need to say, even in the saddest of circumstances, in about an organization with whom I've had a love affair for decades. So the second parenthetical insertion is, why is Captain Joe even talking about this? Would it not be better for him to remain silent? Doesn't loyalty to the command say that he should remain silent and not bring it all up? And to that, my reply, end of parenthesis, my reply to that is this. I've made a lot of mistakes in my command career. I've made a lot of mistakes having to do with sometimes professional judgment. Not often, but sometimes. Sometimes mistakes in the caring of the people that I was privileged to command. Not many, I think, but certainly some. And at each time that I made those mistakes, when they were either brought to my attention or more likely happened was that I brought them to my own attention, I would immediately do the best that I could to make it right. I'm not one for apologies that are shells. I am not one for the use of such platitudes as transparency. My command policy and my personal policy, often rife with failure and rife with not getting it right, was that I was always up in the captain's chair where my people could see me, they knew where I was, they could hear my voice. When it was time for instant obedience, they gave me that instant obedience, and when it was time to render advice or counsel, they gave me that. I've said many times, I'm the most fortunate of men. So those are the parenthetical insertions that I make as a preface to what happened next. What happened next was a statement to the Coast Guard from the commandant. And here I have to address in particular the chief petty officers. As a reminder, as a very young captain, I was raised by chief petty officers. I have had chiefs for whom I have had enormous respect and regard. I have had some few, very few chiefs who did not fulfill the tenets of the chief's creed. And with them, we had come to the captain's sessions. I knew the first Master Chief of the Coast Guard, Charlie Calhoun. His son was an unpromising seaman with me in my Ingham in Vietnam. I've known other Master Chiefs of the Coast Guard. I have used, as it was designed to be used, the Chief's Mess in every single one of my commands. I have been invited to and have attended every single Chief's initiation in all of my commands. I've contributed financially through fines and penalties at all of those initiations. Those of you who are chief petty officers will know exactly what I'm talking about. And before we had any kind of formal recognition, I was inducted as an honorary chief myself. I lay that foundation because in the statement that came from the commandant, she took shelter from the storm behind the current Master Chief of the Coast Guard. So all of you chiefs out there, this is not a chief's problem. This is a problem in the officer corps, at the academy, and certainly with our leadership. And I'm saying this because the commandant herself has, in a somewhat circuitous and Byzantine way, alluded to that. I'm very protective of all of my people. That was part of my service reputation. You don't mess around with Captain Joe's people. That's my job. That was my job. And I continue it, I hope, today when I talk to all of you from the captain's chair. The word shipmate to me, not workforce, not any of those other corporate words that seem to have gotten so popular in the last 10, 15, 20 years. We are not a workforce. We are shipmates. A shipmate is he or she who puts before himself his mates and his ship. That's the key to not having any of these terrible things happen in the first place. That's the key to fixing it right now. And that's the key to what I tried to live, not always successfully, but tried to live. And in particular, when I was captain, and there are those of you who are out there, Captain Joe's people, who have served under my command. You never heard me use the word, I'm up here because I want to be transparent. I'm up here in the captain's chair so you'll know where I am. You'll know that I have a firm grip on this command and all who sail in her. We're going to go out. We're going to accomplish the mission. We're all going to come home safe. And we're going to bring with us those that we have saved. That's what this whole life is all about. In a greater sense, that's what life always should be about. That we look around. If we are a leader of a family, then we have the obligation to fulfill the old cavalry instruction. The good general ensures that his men and his horses are fed before himself. And the captain's corollary, your captain's corollary to that, the captain shall show no fear. So when the commandant said at the change of command in Healy, this is a good time to be in the Coast Guard, I agreed. I did not jump up and wave the flag. I can be somewhat restrained at appropriate times and appropriate places. But my heart bloomed and blossomed. And then the customary and accustomed tear came to my eye when the two captains faced each other. The relieving captain said, "Sir, I relieve you." The relieved captain said, "I stand relieved." And then they turned and they faced the commandant. And each one in turn reported, first, that she had now relieved and she was entitled to be called by the name of her ship, because the captain carries the name of his ship. So for the 2 or 3 years, however long the new captain remains in command, she is Healy. That's her call sign when she goes up in one of her helicopters. That's the call sign if she goes out in her gig. And then the officer who's just been relieved turns to the commandant, salutes, and says, "I have been relieved of my command. I have been properly relieved of my command." In my case, a furtive tear always dropped because I loved every ship and every crew that I was privileged to command. So when the next day the piece came out about not only the investigation, but the fact that it had been concealed, my heart broke, but I knew that the organization itself is basically sound. It's been basically sound since 1790, and it will continue to be basically sound. And so here's the way forward. It is my wish, my hope, and insofar as I can command, it is my command from the captain's chair that each one of us who is listening to this broadcast, in whatever your particular state of life happens to be, if you have an Irish pennant, something that you need to deal with that you've not dealt with, now is the time. If by any chance any senior Coast Guard people are listening to this broadcast, then here is your opportunity to accept responsibility for whatever your part. For my part, my offer is this. Those of you who have served under my command, and there are a number of you out there, if there is anything that of which you believe I may not be aware, or of which you believe I may have sublimated in some way, send me a signal. We'll work it out. When I relieved, every single time when I relieved a command, starting with when I was very young, my words were not as well spoken then as I hope they are now. But at that time, I said, I accept full responsibility for everything that happened before, is happening now, and certainly will happen in the future. I will give you, my crew, and my ship, the best that I can. We don't always do that. But We start off with that resolve. And when the time comes when we don't fulfill our own expectations or the expectations of the mission, then we climb back up into the captain's chair and say, all right, let's do a wash up here. Let's see because I, the captain, I, the commandant, I, the area commander, I, the sector or group commander, that's what I was in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, from which I've just returned, and for which I'd hoped that I would give you a report, because it was a glorious time that I spent up in the Sioux. I've got just a couple minutes left. I make no apologies to anyone who is listening, any one of Captain Joe's people, for taking this half hour. The reason for it is, first of all, catharsis of my own soul. I remain gobsmacked, as my English friends say, that, first of all, classmates would attack classmates at any of the service academies. And secondly, when it happens, that it would not be dealt with summarily and in keeping with the ideas and the ideals of Army buddies. My friend Captain O'Brien has made me one of his Army buddies with his Vietnam unit, an honor that I treasure. And with shipmates. I've been shipmates with hundreds and hundreds of people that I was privileged to command. And I didn't always get it right. Anybody out there who still has a grievance, I'm not talking about professional judgment. You always got my best on that, and my best was really good. I'm not talking about operational decisions, because again, you got my best. And my best was really good. I'm talking about things having to do with personnel matters. I'm talking about things that have to do with matters of being a shipmate. Where did I possibly not fulfill my own feelings about being a shipmate? So quickly, my book today is called The Wreck of the Hesperus. It was a gift from a friend who came back into my life through the voice of Vashon, as a matter of fact. And she found a copy of this in an antique bookstore. It's a lovely, lovely edition. It goes all the way back to 1887. And I'm going to read a quote, and that's going to be before my final remarks. This is a quote from the part of The Wreck of the Hesperus. Part of The Wreck of the Hesperus. Come hither, my little daughter, and do not tremble so. For I can weather the roughest gale that ever wind did blow. He wrapped her warm in his seaman's coat against the stinging blast. He cut a rope from a broken spar and bound her to the mast. So, my dear ones all, my shipmates, all of Captain Joe's people, that's what we're doing right now. I am wrapping my much-loved service in my seaman's coat, and in my own small way, I no longer sit in Washington. I no longer command in Sault Ste. Marie. The best I can do is sit up in the captain's chair here on the magical Isle of Vashon and pontificate. But in my own way, and carrying out in the larger sense to all of Captain Joe's people, that if you, as does my beloved service, have things that it must now do in